Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, right now, I have an author with me who loves vampires, a good laugh, chocolate, and her dogs. She is Jordan Rose, and writing has allowed Jordan to combine all of those elements. She writes paranormal romance, mixing in laughs and vampires while nibbling chocolates as their dogs play under the desk. A few years back, Jordan received a copy of Twilight from her husband as part of her anniversary gift. And by the end of the week, she'd read the entire series and moved on to Anne Rice's Vampire Chronicles. 8 weeks and 18 vampire books later, the idea for her first book came to her, followed very quickly by Eva Prim. The Eva Prim series follows the night-to-night escapades of the demon mistress, a vampire with the inexplicable ability to call demons. With both full-length novels and short stories, the series has a bit of something for everyone. And she has many more books, which we will highlight today. Now, when Jordan's not writing about one vampire or another, she enjoys spending time with her husband, Ken, and their lovely and lovable Labradors, Dino and Enzo, on the beautiful beaches of New England. And we have lots to talk about. So welcome to the network, Jordan.
Thanks for having me, Pat. I'm so excited to be here. It's nice to hear someone talk about me and read my bio that way. I haven't heard that before.
She's like, oh, that's me.
Yeah, exactly. I do that.
I love that. You are quite prolific, Jordan. You have several series with multiple books in each one. The Eva Prim series, A Romance in Central City, Short Seductions, and Spaghetti Romances. Do you write full-time?
I do not. I actually write part-time. And in fact, had to go into my day job today and came running home like a maniac to make sure I made it here for our conversation. So the goal is to write full-time, but I'm still doing it part-time.
Yeah, and that's a lot. I mean, and you're writing a lot of books, so you must really make the time to write.
Yes, I do. I write on 2 days a week, and then I work 3 days a week at my day job.
Okay.
So I try to be very good about it, but I will say that I also do like to shop and visit with my family and clean the house and play with the dog. So staying focused on the writing is something I have to make a commitment to do, because otherwise I'm sidetracked.
Well, you have to have a life as well. So whatever you're doing, it sounds like it's the right combination, because there's a lot going on here, and we'll try to talk about as much as we can. So was Eva Prim the first series?
Yes, the first series. My first book was actually, it's not available anymore, was Perpetual Light, and I thought that was going to be a series, but it ended up just being one book. And then Eva Prim came to me, and I realized I wanted to write funnier things, because that's generally where I tend, you know, I have a sarcastic perspective on things, and I tend to like funnier things, but the dumber the comedy, the better for me. And so Eva Prim came up to be the first series, and I have loved her ever since.
And maybe there's a little sarcasm in the name?
Yes, there is, because her real name is actually Chrysanthemum, which she hates, and so she renamed herself, Eva Prim, being an anagram for vampire.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, tell us then about the inspiration. What inspired you to write about vampires?
You know, it's very funny you ask that, because even now I think I wonder to myself, like, should I stay writing vampires, or, you know, should there be something else? But I am drawn to vampires because of the mythology. You know, you read Dracula and it's just this wonderful mythology that's lived in some form or another, right, through many different civilizations. They all have this, you know, creature that roams around at night and bites people, and then the romanticization of vampires with Dracula, and you know, as I kind of went through the movies and other books, I thought, geez, that is very cool. The idea of something so scary potentially turning into a romantic character just intrigued me. And then, of course, I have to, you know, humanize it with the fact that, you know, Eva Prim's very goofy and, you know, she does silly things and she points out the obvious or, you know, bumbles around doing things she shouldn't do, or any logical person would say that is a bad idea, but she's going to try it anyways. So I just stick with the vampires because I think they're, I don't know, from my end, they can be comical, but I think I like that bit of, you know, scariness mm-hmm. or heroes at times. Mm-hmm.
No, I get that. And I love the titles of them, Demons and Deep Dish Pizza, Demons and the Dark Roast. So there's a lot of interesting titles in this Eva Prim series. Maybe just give us a little sneak peek into that series.
So Eva Prim is a young vampire. When I say young, she's, you know, a 21-year-old woman who became a vampire 200 years ago. And she's been married to this incredibly powerful vampire. So to me, and Eva Prim is sort of a split between Lucille Ball and Elvira. Like, if they had a baby, it would be Eva Prim. So you can see where this is already going off the rails already. So her husband is a mix of Gomez Adams and Ricky Ricardo. Right? So hot-headed, madly in love with her, very powerful. And so he's constantly trying to keep her out of trouble, and she is like a tornado, constantly blowing through things. So if there is a bad decision to be made or an attempt to do it, she will do it. And her goal in life is to have friends. You know, she's one of those people that annoys people, like, because she just says the obvious. She doesn't hold her tongue. She will attempt to do things. She points out that if you're to blame, she's going to make you take the blame for it. She's not even going to pretend that we could pass it off as an accidental situation. She, you know, points out all of these things and makes bad decisions. And so she has a hard time keeping friends. And that's her one goal in life. So she accidentally, and I say accidentally, even though she's warned very, very boldly that you are not to open and read that book, she accidentally reads the demon book that her husband has and realizes he's a demon hunter, not just a vampire. He's a demon hunter who has been trapping demons for thousands of years. And she releases them. So now she's, you know, they've captured 40 of them, or she's released 40, they've captured 28. So there are 12 more they can't capture because they want to be with her. They like her. They want to be her friend. And so she's over the moon excited that she's now got friends. So it's the nightly escapades of her trying to gather all of her friends and without bringing her husband down, who is the New England master vampire. And he's powerful and attempting not to have his region taken over by other vampires because it appears he can't control his wife. So, you know, it's a nonstop battle to keep her out of trouble and yet allow her the freedom to be herself.
She sounds like quite a character.
Yeah, she is a handful, I'll tell you. At times, she makes me very tired.
So are you in control of her, or is she in control of you?
You know, it's funny. Sometimes I will attempt to take a storyline in a certain direction, and she will very clearly take it in another direction. And you probably realize this. You can't force a story to go in a direction it's not going to go. It's clearly not going to work that way. And so there have been a number of rewrites to scenes that I thought, gee, this really should go in this direction, and I think it would sound so much better or work out so much easier if we would just go in this direction, and it just doesn't work, and I have to rewrite it.
Probably similar to your dogs when they want to go one direction and you want to go the other, right?
That is exactly similar. My dogs, while we were talking, were getting excited with playtime, and so they have now been locked in the bedroom. Everybody's got to behave. Right? Exactly. They generally they have to play a bit, and then they calm down and they're under the desk for a while. But as I said, I just got home, so they haven't had an opportunity to be rambunctious and play and get it out of their system. So,
well, if we hear
in the other room,
if we hear anything crazy going on, we'll know who it is.
Yes, yes. Right. If I scream, stop that, it's not you I'm talking to.
I'd love that. That would be awesome. All right. Well, let's talk about another series, A Romance in Central City. You have 8 books, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
The 8th and final book in that series just came out last month.
And that was A Vampire's Purgatory?
Yes.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about that series.
So that series is a romance, a vampire romance. You know, where Eva Prim, there is some romance in it. I mean, she's married to, you know, one person, and they're madly in love. But it's really about her escapades. So this, and so she's in every single book. So in the Central City Romance books, it's all a different hero and heroine for every book. And, you know, the overarching issue that they have to deal with is that Central City is under siege. There's a mad scientist attempting to convert humans into some sort of vampire, man-made vampire army that he can control. And so the vampires are actually good guys, and they're attempting to stop him and thwart all of his efforts. And so that's a typical paranormal romance series where, you know, if you can pick up one book at any point in the series and start reading and you can get into it. So it's always nice if you start from the beginning because you get those little nuances about the overarching story.
All right, that's the romance in Central City. Then your next is Short Seductions, and those are interesting titles like Shanna and the Vampire, Delia and the Werewolf, Tess and the Demon, Jenna and the Telepath, Liza and the Dragon. So we seem like we've got some gal getting into trouble in each one of those.
Right. Those are very spicy little short stories. I had decided I wanted to see, you know, sometimes, you know, you go to your kid's ball game or you're at lunch and you want a little something to read, and if you're like me, you're the type of person who's always like, well, I'll just read one more page. I'll just read one more page. And that can get you into trouble if you need to get back to work and you're doing this on your lunch break, or the kids want you to cook dinner and you just want to read. So I decided, let me write some short stories that can be read very quickly. So they're roughly between 8 and 15,000 words. The longest one is 15,000 words. So they're stories that really, they can be read in an hour, hour and a half top. And they're very spicy, and, you know, it's the heroine's name, and she is falling in love with the paranormal person, whatever, you know, Shannon the Vampire or Delian the Werewolf. So they all take place in a little bar called Seductions. And in an ultra world running parallel with the human world. So it's all of these different paranormals walking around among us that we don't recognize as paranormals. That are all sort of intermingling and at times getting humans into trouble. And so I started that story, and it starts with Shannon and the Vampire and then ends with Lilith and the Human. So the human being, the paranormal, I suppose, in this case. So, and my favorite story being Lilith and the Human, but it's sort of an interesting thing, and I hadn't anticipated it being this way, which is kind of fun. The vampire from the first book is actually the progeny of the vampire from the last book, which Lilith is the vampire. So kind of a neat wrap up to that story and the way they all relate. So I love that little series, but it's much sexier than I would generally write.
Like, who wrote that?
Exactly. And can I read it again? Because it sort of makes me blush.
It wasn't me. It was my alter. My alter friend here. Now, you also have a boxed set of that.
Mm-hmm.
So all books are in that box set?
No, the first five are in the box, the first box set. So the second box set comes out around the holidays.
Okay.
And then, and that'll be the second half of it. And then I think hopefully the final full box set will come out sometime around Valentine's Day.
Oh, well, that'd be perfect for Valentine's, wouldn't it?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Excellent, excellent. Now, this one intrigues me. Spaghetti romances. We have The Witch, The Weeds, and The Ware. And Secret, I love this one, Secrets, Lies, and Meatballs. And apparently there's the meatball is the main character in that book.
Well, that one, the meatball is predicting who you marry. So it predicts who your love interest is, which is comical. The grandmother in that particular book is a matchmaker, a witch, and so and that whole series is written in Robin Peterman Vaughn's Magic and Mayhem world. So it's one of the Kindle World books series. So in the meatball book, the grandmother is a matchmaker, and the way that she does it is she makes meatballs, and one for you, and then she makes a meatball for your meatball, and the meatball is eaten by the person that you're supposed to spend your life with. So in many cases, the grandchildren and children of this woman are avoiding meatballs at all costs. They don't want anyone to eat a meatball. They don't want to eat a meatball themselves. Like, they are not ready to be tied to anyone. And so, you know, the meatballs just pop up all over the place, like waiting to, like, you know, would you like a meatball? Like, you know, so She spends all of her time trying to get them married off, and they spend all of their time trying to avoid getting married off. That book actually ends with a happily ever after, but the next book in that series comes out in June and has a few people getting matched up with their meatballs.
Where did you come up with this?
You know, I don't know. I knew I needed, I like wanted to write something very funny. The Magic and Mayhem series is very funny and lighthearted and just a great little series. And so, I needed something that fit in that world. And that's what came to me. So you can imagine how the ideas just flow. You're sitting there waiting and there it is.
It must be fun to live in your mind, right?
I'm sure some people might think that that is a very twisted place to be, but I think overall it's not too bad.
I like it. Well, so let's talk about your success in this genre. Why do you feel you're so successful at it?
I think for a couple of reasons. One, to have any success at writing, you have to write. You know, you have to keep putting more books out. And then the other reason I think is defining success, right? So I started out thinking, I want to be, you know, a full-time writer. I want to make a ton of money at this. This is what my goal is. And then I ended up having to take a leave of absence a couple years ago from my full-time job at the time. Wasn't feeling well. And while I was home, I did a lot of sort of soul-searching and figuring out, gee, what do I want to do? And I realized that being home full-time in front of my computer, not talking with anyone, was not really how I wanted. I wouldn't define that as success. I would define that as who is going to stop me from going off the rails here and spending way too much time alone. That, you know, that's not what I want to do with myself. So I had to redefine what success meant for me. And so, you know, success means putting books out, having some audience that enjoys them, interacting with people on a fairly regular basis. And for me now, understanding how to work some of the intricacies of my own website, being able to create some of the graphics to go along with, you know, the whole writing and marketing. And so I redefined success, you know, so I don't need to make millions and I don't need to think, gee, I'm failing because I'm not making millions. I need to be happy in what I do. And so I realized that. And so I would say that what makes me successful is understanding what success means to me and then enjoying it. You know, I have to say there, you know, you've got to stop and smell the roses. You got to stop and really enjoy what you're doing. Like, I love knowing who my characters are. I love writing. I love editing the books. Like, I like going through all of that process. So if there are parts that I don't like I don't love the marketing piece. I don't love having to actually think from a sales perspective. I'm not good at selling things. I'm just really not. I would rather push someone else's books than my own. But even that is a struggle for me because I'm just not good at sales. Like, I'm just not that comfortable there. So I have to accept that, right? And then figure out what I can do that'll make that easier. Or accept that, gee, if you don't market it, you're not going to sell it. So I think, again, it's really balancing that and figuring out, gee, what does success mean and getting comfortable there. So that's what I would say.
I think that is a million-dollar answer for the century here. So many times we have this impression or this thought of what success is without really stopping to think, okay, what does that really mean to me and why? So yeah, I'm so thrilled that you answered that way, because I do think it's going to help a lot of people who are listening. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
So we talked about those four series. Are there any other books that we missed that you wanted to bring up?
You know, I do have something coming down the line next year. In terms of a new series that I think will focus more on angels and the afterlife as opposed to the vampires. So I'm having to develop that world now, and having to remind myself that, you know, there doesn't need to be any biting in this, and, you know, there doesn't need to be any fangs. Like, they're, you know, they can go out in daylight. Like, there are certain rules that I don't need to apply to this world. So that's sort of exciting, but coming down the pike.
Oh, I like that. That's going to give you a whole different perspective and help you grow and think out of your comfort zone.
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. I'm very excited about it.
Excellent. All right. Well, we can look forward to that. We'll have to maybe do another interview once those start flowing from you. So let's talk a little bit about character development, because you do have a lot of characters going on in all of your books. As you begin to write them, Do you use any kind of questionnaire to help you get to know them better, like what's in their refrigerator right now, on their floor, on the nightstand, in the garbage can, or is this just come to you and you write as it happens?
You know what, it just comes to me and I write as it happens. Sometimes, you know, I'll think, okay, character X is this way, and I'll have one or two specifics about that character that I know, this for sure has to be part of this character. But I don't know other things about them. And I struggle to plot and to really do all of that advanced planning for books because I'm really a pantser writer. I write what comes to me and what feels good. If I try to plan it out in advance, then I end up not writing it, which is, I wish that I could do it the other way because it seems like it would just be so nice to be that organized. But I am not that organized in reality, never mind in writing. So I don't see that I'm ever going to get there. So that's sort of on my wish list of things I wish I could do that I just shouldn't even bother trying to force myself to do. So that's one of those things that I don't do. And sometimes I'm really surprised by what I learn about characters. You know, in the Eve of Prim series, there's a transsexual, transvestite demon that, who saw that coming? Like, I certainly didn't see it coming. And turns out he's, you know, one of my most favorite characters because he's so flamboyant and dramatic and agitated over things that happen. And he speaks with a French accent. And I certainly didn't plan for him. And so when he showed up, I was like, who the heck is this guy? So, the characters flow in the same way the story flows. And if I try to force them to be something they're not, mm-hmm. it doesn't work. I mean, even down to what is their hair color like? What are their eyes like? What do they like or not like? And is this a good character to be paired up with this other character? And sometimes there's just no forcing it. It either works or it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. No, I get that, and it's interesting as I interview authors. Some are very cut and dry, saying, "Oh yeah, I've got 100 questions that I fill out, and I have spreadsheets, and I know exactly who and what." And then others are just as you say. Naming your characters, how do you go about selecting names?
So Eva Prim came to me right away, right? So I actually, the character for her, one of my favorite characters in the entire world was Lucy Ricardo. I think this might actually be in my bio on my website, but so much so that I named, when my parents gave me a puppy when I was 3, they gave me a German Shepherd Mutt. And I named him Lucy. And with Lucille Ball, my father, to this day, I mean, it was many years later, still has not forgiven me for naming that boy Lucy.
Funny.
and said it was because of that that he just could not, the dog would not behave. He was, like a boy named Sue. He just was angry all the time. So I knew for Eva Prim that she was going to be like Lucille Ball. She was going to be like Elvira. She was a vampire and Eva Prim was her name, and then all the other things started to come to me so quickly and easily, and so that wasn't an issue. And then even naming her husband and the characters in that series was very easy. You know, all of her, she's the 13th girl, right, of 19th century hippies, so they're all named after flowers, so that was super easy. Like, all of their names came to me so easily. And, you know, I enjoyed it. There were other times, like this is when I wrote A Vampire's Purgatory. The name, I had to change the name of the heroine after writing the book because her name, so it stuck with me. Thankfully, my editor had said, you realize that the name you've chosen is close to the name of this other heroine and that when they're on the page together, I kept confusing the two of them back and forth. So I had to change the name. So I changed the name once and sent it back for a second round of edits. And then when she sent it back to me, I didn't know who the characters were. Like, I didn't recognize the name of the heroine, so I had to change the name again so that I could connect with the heroine.
Wow.
So sometimes naming characters isn't easy. You know, sometimes it doesn't stick for some reason. And then others, it does. You know, I've had a couple of contests with my newsletter group where I'll ask them to name a character. And so they recently named a canary in the upcoming series, and I have to announce the winner of that contest. But so it's kind of neat. There are some things where I can say, "Help somebody, help me," and there are other things where I confuse myself by naming the character.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, interesting. But when it's right, you know it.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about your publishing process. Did you self-publish? How did you go about getting these out there?
My first book, I was published with a small press that has since closed. But I wanted to publish with a press, whether it was small or large, I didn't really care, with my first book, because I had never been through it. I didn't have any idea what the process was like. I had no idea that I actually had written a paranormal romance, because at that time I wasn't actually a big romance reader. I had no concept that that's what the book was. I mean, that's how green I was. So I really wanted to have someone guide me. And so that I went through that process the first time. And then after that, I realized that, hey, I can actually do this. I at that time, I was a member of Romance Writers of America. I was a member of a couple of local chapters, and so I was able to find editors through there. I was able to find cover artists through those groups. And so now everything I publish, I have published on my own, and I've enjoyed it. I must say, I like controlling everything, like when it's going to come out, who the editor is going to be, whether or not I'm going to accept the edit, the cover art, all of that. It's a lot of fun to be able to have that much control.
I agree. I'm glad that self-publishing came into its own. It gives everybody an opportunity, really, to share themselves with the world.
Right, right, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your cover art, because I find it very interesting. Do you have the same artist per series?
No, I don't, actually. I've had three or four different artists. So for the whole Romance in Central City series, I've had the same cover artist. I had beautiful cover art for my first go-round with the Eva Prim book. I love them, and actually I'm looking at one of the old covers now, and I just adore them. However, those covers weren't generating enough interest. Like, as much as I love them, it wasn't telling readers what the story was about enough. So I have since changed to new covers for the Eva Prim series, and I'm in the process there. I think there's still a couple of books that the new covers aren't up for. And I love the new covers, but the same artist is doing all of those covers. I had a different artist do the Short Seductions covers. You know, I haven't had the same cover artist for any of the series. I have someone different for each one.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense, I think.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've wandered around all of your books today, and I'm glad we had a chance to hit most of them. Is there anything, then, that we missed that you wanted to talk about today?
Pat, when we were preparing, I was saying I hadn't had an interview like this, so it was really kind of nice to go through it. It was great to have an opportunity to actually talk about all of the books, which, you know, once they're written and published, and even to the point like Purgatory came out last month, and once they're out, I move on to the next book, mm-hmm. so I don't start thinking about them again. So this is kind of fun for me.
It gives you a little peek back, and you should be so proud of yourself. I mean, there's just so much wonderful work out here. So I'm looking forward to your newer series, too, the ones with the angels. Do you have a name for that yet?
The working name right now is Love in the Afterlife.
Okay. Well, we can look forward to that. Meantime, where can people go then to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your books?
They can pop by the website anytime, jordankrose.com. I also have a Facebook page that I try to post on weekly, so they can visit me there. I think it's Jordan K. Rose Author at Facebook. I have Twitter, so Jordan K. Rose on Twitter. I'm on Instagram, Pinterest. All of my books are available on Amazon and iBooks, which seem to be the two bestsellers for me. Though I will say the Spaghetti Romances are only available on Amazon because that's the Kindle World series. But otherwise, everything else is available on Nook, Kobo, Google Play. So you can catch them at all of the big sites.
You are where you're supposed to be, my friend. We can find more about you at jordankrose.com. And that's JORDAN. K, R-O-S-E.com, JordanKRose.com. Well, Jordan, any final words before we say goodbye?
I hope your listeners will consider joining my newsletter. You can do that on my website as well to get more information and, you know, enjoy some contests. But Pat, I appreciate you chatting with me, and I hope that if anyone has any questions or is looking for any information, they can certainly email me at contactjordan@jordankrose.com. Happy to answer any other questions. Wow.
Well, yay. This has been so fun. So everyone head over to jordankrose.com. Jordan, thank you for spending time with us and sharing you and your series. I really, really enjoyed this.
Thanks so much, Pat. I appreciate your time.